Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
So the big news, the Republicans passed a stunt kind of sham of a budget. One of those temporary stopgap things like we see in D.C. And the governor said, we're going to have none of that. You're going to come to work. You're going to sit down and we're going to hammer this out. And I think the governor's got the high ground here, especially when he came out and said, look, I've been to work every day. I come in, I punch the clock, I'm here, I'm seated at the table, ready to do some horse trading, some bargaining. Where have you been? And the truth is, they've been on vacation. And that's one of those things that I think a lot of my friends, anyway, are angry about. I understand if you're not getting things done, but you're working at it, but to just go vacation kind of makes you wonder, which is why we've asked our good friend John Neuer, our communications director for Keystone Progress, to come talk with us. John, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always great to be with you, Rick.
So here we are. It looks like, you know, there's no budget in sight. Here we are, I think, where everybody said we would be, a couple of months overdue, and, well, gimmickry, gamery, Washington-style politic. Here it is.
Yeah, you know, this notion that there's going to be this vote on Wednesday, that they split up the basically the revenue-producing components of the governor's budget proposal. They split that out. They're going to vote on that. And, you know, for the Democrats and for the governor, it's an uphill battle. I mean, the numbers obviously make this really difficult, where you have to get, 20 Republicans in the House, and I think it's seven, then it would be seven Republicans in the Senate to vote for this. It's what's frustrating, though, is that what those revenue-producing components of the governor's budget represent is our ability as a state to effectively budget and function and not continue to have our credit downgraded, which it has been five times in the last 3 years, by credit rating agencies because we aren't collecting enough revenue to pay for even the minimums. And frankly, and we've talked about this many times, there is not enough funding in the first place for public education and social services.
Right.
That's why we have a Tom Wolf instead of a Tom Corbett, frankly. And we weren't even able to pass budgets that collected enough revenue to efficiently balance those budgets that weren't paying out enough to public education and social services in the first place. So if you are a staunch fiscal conservative and you're the kind of elected official that goes around on the stump and talks about how we should have a balanced budget amendment and things like that, if that's who you really are, it's not all a song and dance, then you should step up to the plate and say, yeah, we need to have a balanced budget, which means we need to have the revenue to be able to pay out what we need to pay out and not be downgraded by these credit rating agencies. It's a total sham.
It is a total sham. But you know what? I did this, and I've been talking about this all week. I did this this focus group on Monday where I presented the labor perspective, if you will, in what was a kind of a sham. I mean, the whole thing was to get to a position where they can say, you know, we polled these people and we went to this focus group and they all want to break unions and they all hate workers and they all want the governor to pass what the Republicans want in the budget. And what the frame that they used on Monday was, is did you know that the Republicans and the Democrats, the Republicans, all of them and all of the Democrats, they agree on about 70% of the budget. So we should just do that. And the other stuff, well, we can fight over forever. And, you know, the reasonable people in the room are going, sounds rational. That's what we should do. And I'm going, no, that's not what we should do. Because the other stuff then never gets done. You know, like taking care of children, like helping the poor, like helping seniors. That stuff gets, well, left out.
Well, the other problem there is that a huge part of that 30% that there is an agreement on is actually paying for the other 70%. No, that's the problem
right
here. And you can't have your cake and eat it too. That's not how budgeting works. So, you know, I understand the unfortunate realities of when you get people in a room like that and you get groupthink and everybody, you know, and people decide they want to cut welfare benefits. You know, or people decide that they want to cut other social services or whatever. You know, everybody wants their taxes reduced. But that's not the world that we live in. That's not reality. And most of the elected officials that we're talking about in Harrisburg understand that. Now, whether or not they do the right thing, that's a whole other question. But yeah, most of them at least understand that reality.
You know, here's the thing that gets me, though. I mean, I think most of us live in a reality-based world where when you lay it out, you say, look, we want to educate our kids. We want to have all of these services. We want this stuff. We've decided this over the years. Now, you just have to pay for it. It's a matter of being big boys and big girls and saying, okay, we've gotten away from paying our fair share into this, and especially big corporations and the very wealthy. Maybe we have an adult conversation about, you know, how do we fund all of the things that we want in our society, which I don't think is happening right now.
No, not at all. I think that's absolutely right. And the other problem is when it comes down to it, and we saw this. We saw this when we had $1 billion cut from public education over the last 4 years. When it really hits home.
No. Not over the last four years. Each of the last 4 years.
Okay, yes. Sorry. I'm sorry. I said that incorrectly. So what we're talking about is when this really hits home and you start to see a situation where, well, now your kids don't have the textbooks they need, or now your kids are in a classroom with 35 kids. Then people say, well, wait, whoa. You can't keep doing these cuts to public education. But then you have to have that difficult conversation about where that funding comes from, and people don't want to have that.
Yeah, and look, at the end of it, do I like paying taxes? No, but I do like having my roads plowed, and I do like my kids having a school that has programs that are going to help them in their lives and not just saddling them into 100 into a class, which I have an enormous problem with. I'm willing to pay a little bit more, and I think as a society, if you were to lay that out, in a big boy fashion, big girl fashion, I think people overwhelmingly go, yeah, you know, that makes sense.
And, you know, I think here's another thing that people understand, or people should understand, is that if they're unable to pass the revenue increases on Wednesday, and you go back and you look at what the Republicans have already passed thus far, and look at that as a framework for our budget moving forward. In 2016, 2017, if that's the framework for a budget moving forward, then our state structural deficit goes to over $3 billion because you know, the Republicans are unable and unwilling to have a real conversation about the revenue side of the balance sheet. Over $3 billion. I mean, that, and think about what would have to be done by this time next year, or, you know, by summer of next year, to be able to not have our credit downgraded, to be able to pay our bills, frankly, to not have to lay off massive amounts of workers. What would happen is, you know, another $1 billion in cuts to things like public education or the Department of Human Services. And, you know, the consequences to that, after we've already cut for the last 4 years, would be unbelievable. It is scary to think about.
And maybe it's what we need, though. I mean, honestly, I mean, there's a part of me that goes, John, there's a part of me that goes, you know, maybe sometimes people need to smack upside the back of the head to go, oh yeah, that's right, now I get it. Let's undo all the bad stuff.
I understand the sentiment. At the same time, wouldn't you call that what happened over the last 4 years when we talk about public education? People were smacked in the back of the head. And like I said, that's why we have Tom Wolf and not Tom Corbett as governor. I think that's, you know, reason number one. So,
but do you think it's
the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result?
Right. But do you think that's happened to enough people yet? I mean, you know, a lot of the really draconian cuts, when you look at what Corbett and the Republicans did, kicking 41,000 low wage workers off of adult basic, almost 90,000 kids off a CHIP, all of the education cuts, they were mostly targeted at poor people who, right, you know, don't have the kind of political clout or power to really be able to fight back. I don't think it's really hit the middle class of the country as hard as what we're going to see would.
I think that's a very good point. I think that's well put. I think it's absolutely true. I just hope that it doesn't get to that.
Well, you and me both.
You know, I mean, I would never advocate anything like that. And hopefully, you have elected officials that have the guts to step up and do what, like I said, they understand is the right thing.
Right. But what they're going to do, John, is they're just going to try and change the subject, which we saw, you know, over the last several weeks with this nonsensical English-only nonsense and the Daryl Metcalf hearing where, you know, the woman wants to ask a question. He's like, no, you can't. No, no, shut up. And I'm going, yeah. Wait a second. Where are we?
I want to personally apologize at the onset of this conversation for Daryl Metcalf. I'm sitting here in southern Butler County in Daryl Metcalf's district. And though I have never obviously been a Daryl Metcalf voter, I do feel some responsibility for continuing to send him back to Harrisburg, you know, election after election. And, you know, this is not, I feel like we've had conversations like this about Daryl Metcalf a half a dozen times now in the last year or two. And this is not surprising. But here's the problem, and I think you make a good point about them wanting to change the subject. I think that Republican leadership are more than happy to let Daryl Metcalf have his circus.
Yep.
Because it does change the subject. And the instance that you talk about, this is now, I think, last Monday when his House Government Committee had a hearing on the English-only bill, or the bill to make English the official and only language of the state of Pennsylvania. You know, he shut down the first ever Latina representative from Pennsylvania, Leslie Costa, was doing what almost every representative or senator does in a committee hearing before they ask a question, which is they're allowed to take a little bit of time and make a point before they ask a question of the witness.
Right.
And she was doing just that and making some fantastic arguments as to why this is a terrible bill. And he totally shut her down, cut her mic off. It was embarrassing. But on top of that, we come to find out that not one, but two of the folks giving testimony at the hearing, invited by Daryl Metcalf, were the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled them as white nationalists. As white nationalists. And
otherwise known as white supremacists.
Well, not if you ask Daryl Metcalf, because here's the kicker. When he was confronted, I think via email, by Representative Acosta about that, when that came to light after the fact, he publicly, to a reporter, was trying to basically split hairs and say that somebody who's a white nationalist, that's way different than somebody who's a white supremacist, which, by the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center says is total BS. They're used interchangeably. They are one and the same. But he had the gall to publicly, to a reporter, he knew he was on the record, say, actually, there's a huge difference between white supremacist and white nationalist. You can't make this up. You really can't. I mean, it seems like it's out of a, you know, an Onion article. But this is reality. This is my representative, and that's why I want to apologize personally.
Yeah, well, look, I appreciate you apologizing for him. I don't think that there's anything that we can apologize for with him. I mean, really, it's inexcusable. It's something that should never happen. And the hope is that someone where you live, maybe you, decide to take this.
In the age of Facebook, Rick, there are too many pictures that I don't know how to make go away. But I will say, I think that this district in particular, not to, you know, get too far down in the weeds on this, but the district where I live, and I think there are a number of districts that are similar to this. It's changing very quickly. There are new and enlightened people moving into this district. And I know we've talked about this before, and while they might be, you know, fiscally more conservative on some issues, there is no district in the state of Pennsylvania, even as currently constituted in this district, where 50% plus one of the people would hear what Darrell Metcalf did last week and say, yep, that's the kind of person I want representing me in Harrisburg.
Yeah, I mean, there are very few people going, yep, that's my guy, unless maybe you're a white nationalist.
I guess so, but I mean, luckily, I know a lot of my neighbors, and I can tell you that there are, I don't know any of them who are actually white nationalists. So I don't think, again, you know, there is that huge white nationalist constituency that really gets the vote out for Darrell Metcalf every 2 years. I think, though, that we have a whole bunch of people who aren't aware of who Darrell Metcalf is and what he stands for,
exactly.
And then they don't vote.
I say the same thing about my representative. You know, I've got friends who say, oh, he's a nice guy. I go, yeah, he may be a nice guy, but his votes are insane. I mean, the guy politically is off the rails. And if people knew just how bad his voting record is and the positions that he takes, hopefully they would go, nah, I'm not thrilled with that.
Well, yeah, there's another component of this that's important too, which is that, you know, and we have a petition that we sent out this week. And what we need to have happen is, you know, Republican leadership in Harrisburg should be held accountable for this kind of behavior, and they need to reprimand Darrell Metcalf,
yes.
And they don't. So it's a distraction from other things that are going on, and then they cross their fingers and hope that it just can be swept under the rug and goes away. And then they can bring out the Darrell Metcalf circus again in a few more weeks when they need another distraction.
That's just so, Darrell being Darrell. What can we do?
But, you know, that's what you have to. It is. He's not just representing the folks, unfortunately, the folks in the district where I live. When he is a chairman of a committee like this, and you're having a conversation about a very controversial bill, he is representing more than just his constituency in his district.
Yep.
He's representing all of us. He's representing Pennsylvania. And that's where Republican leadership, we should hold their feet to the fire on that.
Yeah, I mean, that story went national. I mean, he's representing us to the world, and people look at it and go, yep, that's the U.S., a bunch of white nationalists.
And he's probably fundraising off of it, too.
Well, you know he is. It's just amazing stuff. And if you want to check out the petitions to help the weigh in on the governor's veto, also weigh in on the Darrell Metcalf thing, we've got links at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on John Norah's name. Take you right there. Good stuff to get involved with. John, last question. You guys, are doing a campaign to kind of bring people in, right?
We are, actually. The organization, we're moving to a membership structure, and what that means basically is, you know, we're trying to get folks to be sustaining members for Keystone Progress, and what that means to be a member is that you have a say in the direction of the organization. We're going to have conferences specific to our members. We're going to have great conversations about sort of the issues that we're focused on, and how we can make Pennsylvania a more sustainably progressive state for all of us. So, you know, that's another thing to check out. And I should say we're also working on a new website that should be up in a week or two. So hopefully the next time we talk, we'll be able to talk about that new website that we're launching with that should have all kinds of information about all the stuff that we're talking about.
Good stuff. A big rollout that we can all expect, all look forward to. John, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
It's great to talk to you as always, Rick.
All righty, John Norah, Communication Director over at Keystone Progress. You want to check out their stuff, go to thericksmithshow.com. Click on John's name. Took you right there. Let's quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.